Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for taking time to visit. Welcome to the North.
Nice to be back.
Yeah, you just wrapped up a breakfast with local farmers, ranchers, agribusiness folks. So what'd you talk about?
Wide range of issues. Obviously, sugar came into play and recent decisions the department's made and sort of the balance that we have in this sugar program to make sure that we are doing what we need to do to help farmers, but at the same time also being sensitive to consumer and price increases in food. Opportunity to talk about a little bit about ag research. Obviously, we're dealing with high path avian influenza again, and the need for us to develop over time a vaccine and the importance of agricultural research in helping to create that vaccine. Talked a little bit about climate, the Climate Smart Agriculture commodity program that we launched. The deadline for the first set of larger projects was on Friday, so we're excited to see how many applications we received, and I suspect that we received far more than the resources that are available. So excited about that. Talked a little bit about processing. The fact that we're expanding processing capacity to try to create more competition and maybe lower prices for consumers and give farmers a fair shake. So wide range of issues discussed, and an opportunity as well to speak to some of the students who are graduating today.
There's been a lot of concern, as I'm sure you're aware, and the farmers may have told you too. You may have noticed on your drive, it's real wet up here in the north. It's been wet and cold. Planting season has been delayed, and it's not only the planting that has been delayed, and it's not only planting that is affected when it's wet and cold outside. You mentioned highly pathogenic avian influenza. The longer it's cold and wet, the longer that seems to stick around. And I know you were in the administration when the first really bad wave of highly pathogenic avian influenza came around in 2015. Mm-hmm. You've acknowledged that a lot has been learned in the last few years with HPAI. Where would you say, opportunities, do you see opportunities now that we've gone through a few weeks of this outbreak, opportunities and things that maybe you hadn't noticed the first round that makes this a little different?
Well, I think why this is different is, first of all, I think people were able to get information about testing more quickly than in 2014, 2015, when we experienced this before. We are more sensitive to getting quick test results so that we can do what we need to do to quarantine, to ultimately eradicate and dispose. And I think farmers have done a great job at working with local officials to be able to get rid of their flocks in a way that doesn't necessarily spread the disease. I think other farmers have been, very sensitive to the biosecurity needs on their farms, and so we haven't seen quite the lateral spread that we saw in 2015. So there have been a lot of improvements in terms of how this has been handled. It's still devastating to those who are impacted and affected by it, which is why we're trying to make sure we get the resources to them and to indemnify them for their losses and to make sure that we're covering it adequately. We've allocated several hundred million dollars and would expect and anticipate that we're going to continue to be making payments for a while. The good news is that we're seeing a bit of a slowdown of reported incidences, which is consistent with the fact that things are getting warmer. And as things get warmer, perhaps not here, unfortunately, but as things get warmer in the rest of the country, we're seeing fewer and fewer incidences, which is good.
Do you anticipate tapping more into the Commodity Credit Corporation for some of that extra indemnity fund? I mean, how much of the current money that you've tapped out of that has been used?
We still have ways to go before we've used all that has been allocated. We did about a $230 million, $240 million increase recently, and that resource is now in the process of being utilized, and we haven't fully utilized it yet. We have plenty of space and plenty of room in the Commodity Credit Corporations. We had a meeting, actually, of the board of the Commodity Credit Corporation earlier this week, and there's plenty of room in that resource to be able to provide adequately, so I'm not concerned about that.
I'm going to transition here. I'm going to talk a little bit about the weather, but a little bit further west. So we've got a really bad blizzard in mid-April. It's been a really wet, cold calving season for folks, and they've lost a lot of calves. We know the livestock indemnity program is available at the Farm Service Agency to help farmers and ranchers that have suffered losses. But local lawmakers, I know, are asking for changes to the livestock indemnity program, an update to the calf rate payment. What's the path forward for that at USDA to make those kinds of changes?
Well, my first contact about that was Senator Hovind. I met with him recently on the budget, and he raised this issue, and we're in the process of looking at it. And that's pretty much what I can say, is that we're in the process of looking at it. No decisions have been made understand and appreciate that the values, because of the nature of the market today, are significantly different than they were perhaps when the system was first set up. So it's something we have to take a look at.
Senator Hovind, I visited with him this week. He also told me he visited with you about the new WIP Plus program. Give us an update. What's the implementation looking like with this new WIP Plus?
Well, as I indicated to the senator, and he's aware of the fact that the first tranche of resources went out to our livestock producers. A little over $550 million or so was allocated, and it was done in a way which we think was an improvement over the previous efforts. In the past, what happened is that you would announce the program and then it would take 6 or 7 months for farmers to get paid. When we announced the structure of the program, farmers were paid within a couple of weeks. We expect and anticipate on the crop side that we will put in place the structure hopefully this month with payments hopefully in June.
The implementation of it was really iffy in the first round. Disaster aid isn't quick, and that's been, I think, a frustration because, you know, you get past the drought season when growers or ranchers really need that money.
What we were able to do was to essentially take existing information under for the livestock folks under the livestock indemnity program and basically apply that and sort of fill in the application, if you will. So it was just a matter of farmers essentially okaying and signing off so payments could be made. On the crop side, traditionally the farmers would be required to fill out a form that had 250 boxes that they had to check. Most of that information we have by virtue of crop insurance or NAP coverage. So those applications will now be pre-filled. So there will be just a couple of boxes for farmers to check and then to sign once we launch this thing. So it should be very, very quick in terms of their ability to apply and get the resources.
Are there ways to speed up the process of disaster relief in the future? Is that the best
way? That's the way to do it, is to essentially take the information that you get from the traditional programs and pre-fill the application so the farmer doesn't have to spend a whole lot of time online or in the office trying to figure out how to check the right box.
You've got more travels coming up this next week, I see. You're going to be traveling internationally over to Germany and to Poland. When you meet with those G7 countries and you talk about what's happening in Ukraine and the efforts the United States is doing to help, what will you tell them?
Well, I think, first of all, that we want to make sure they understand that we are utilizing all of our food assistance programs, whether it's through the programs that USAID basically administers, the Food for Progress program, Food for Peace program, or whether it's through the Bill Emerson Trust, which we just tapped. The Bill Emerson Trust was established by Congress a number of years ago, had about $282 million in the fund. We've utilized or will utilize that to purchase product. Then we're working with our shipping industry to try to see if there are ways in which we can reduce the cost of transporting that product to areas in need. It will primarily go to areas in North Africa and the Middle East. And the reason for that is that's basically where Ukrainian grain would normally go that may not be able to go because ports have been shut down because of the war that Russia started. And so that's one message. The second message is that we're looking for ways in which we can incent and encourage a bit more production in the country here. From a double cropping perspective, trying to eliminate utilizing risk management tools to eliminate the risk of a double crop so that potentially farmers don't see the risk involved and see the benefit, potential benefit, so that we can increase product a bit. And I think we'll also make sure we advise them that we're looking at ways in which we can be a bit more self-sufficient in terms of some of the inputs that we now are now constrained because of this conflict. Obviously, the fertilizer issue is a big one. We're going to announce very soon the $250 million structure for fertilizer. We're getting a lot of interest in that. We're encouraging farmers to use technology and conservation practices to try to limit the amount of fertilizer that they need. We're obviously going to continue to try to invest in research to get to a point over time where we may not need as much fertilizer. So there are a multitude of things that we're trying to do, and so we need to share that with our colleagues. Going to Poland to make sure that I get an assessment of exactly where things are. We think we know where things are, but I'll have an opportunity to meet with Ukrainian officials and get a firsthand information.
What's the most difficult decision, you know, being an agriculture secretary in these uncertain times when we're talking about a little bit more in the spotlight of the global hunger situation? What are some of the hardest decisions you have to make?
Well, it's a hard decision to make as you try to balance the need for agriculture to do its part, but at the same time, agriculture to also do its part in terms of climate. The reality is we agriculture, I think, has a role to play in climate change and in mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions and carbon sequestration. You do that through a variety of different programs, including CRP, and so there's a nice balance between CRP and at the same time trying to produce more product, more crops. I think we trust the farmer to make the right decision for their operation. And as a result, we've seen fewer acres going into that general sign-up that we normally would see. And so the result is obviously more acres are going to go into production, which under the circumstances responds, I think, to the humanitarian need that we're going to see now, and it's probably going to accelerate over the future.
On the topic of trade, you told farm broadcasters earlier this week that the USDA was vetting a possible candidate for an undersecretary of trade, something I know you've been looking forward to adding on. But you also mentioned to those farm broadcasters that getting folks through the ethics process has not been an easy thing. And in fact, some folks have been required, if they have a farm, to have to sell the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And I understand other folks in previous administrations didn't have to jump those hurdles. Why the change? Why the change in this administration and that ethics process?
Well, I think this administration wants to make sure that everything that we do is above board and is totally ethical. I think the president is very focused on making sure that we have the highest ethics standards possible, because I think people expect that from the government. And it's, I think, a reaction to the fact that that wasn't necessarily the case in previous administrations. And so we're going to do it. And we're going to have a very good person in that position. I'm really hopeful that we're able to address this and announce it in the very, very near future.
Okay. So you don't see that being a hurdle as the positions get named?
Not with this individual, no.
No. Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Anything else about this trip to Minnesota?
Well, I think we're very anxious next week to see where things are with reference to expanded processing capacity. The deadline for the first $150 million in grants applications is May 11th, I believe. And so we'll see how many applications there are. I know there are at least 24 at last count. And we'll see where they are and what they're proposing, and see how we might be able to get those initial resources out and structure the balance of the $225 million that's coming this summer, and additional lending opportunities as well can be utilized to begin expanding capacity. Expect and anticipate that we're going to see as well some movement on Packers and Stockyards here in the very near future, as we try to make sure that we're creating a balance between producers and processors in terms of their relationship. So there's going to be a busy summer between the Climate Smart Agriculture Partnership Initiative, the producer, the efforts on the fertilizer side, the climate or the food security issues involved with Ukraine, getting the process started in terms of beginning to discuss the need for a conversation about the size of the Farm Bill. You know, there's a lot of conversation today about what's in the Farm Bill. I start with how big is the pie? I think, Congress would do well to understand the importance of this industry, this food and agriculture industry. They would do well to understand that they can't always just do everything within the same resource. When you're constrained from a resource perspective, you end up then having to pit aspects of agriculture against one another. I don't think that's necessarily under the circumstances what we should be doing. I think we should be looking at what is the need, and then define the value and the significance of the need, and then figure out ways in which that need can be met, as opposed to saying, here's a limited amount of money, now go figure out how to fit all the needs within that limited amount of money. It seems to me it's a bit backwards.